there are other very critical meetings around the precinct, so the IEC is here and I don't know what else. So we apologize that we have that legal hitch, but we believe we can start. Can we, so that's apologies. Are there other serious apologies that need to be specified, Mr. Castle?
We've received apologies from Honorable Tau, Honorable Labaskarni, Honorable Nita, Honorable Motara, Honorable Nagode, Honorable Frolic, Honorable Killian, and Honorable Singh. That's the indication we've got. And Honorable Bonatun.
Honorable Skin, are you there?
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. My deputy, Honorable Waters, is in the IEC meeting and it was decided he would attend there, so I could attend here.
Okay. Chairperson, is there somebody you needed to? Okay. Honorable Mkhalipi and Honorable Dekhale.
Thank you, Speaker. I don't know if these are the serious apologies, but I must just do it anyway. It's for Honorable Matthias, Honorable Josie, and Honorable Nkwene. They can't make it.
Honorable Khaled.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. Another serious apology for Honorable Nyambi.
Honorable Tikiza, and
thank you very much, Chair. I wasn't mandated, but it was reported in the Chief Whip's Forum that Honorable Carter's daughter is in theatre this morning, so she couldn't even come to the Chief Whip's Forum, and I suspect that will affect her participation even in this meeting.
Okay, thank you. With those apologies, the meeting proceeds to the agenda.
Sorry, Madam Speaker. I've just been following up with my members. Honourable Mazzoni is in the inquiry, the Public Enterprises Inquiry, so she also won't be able to attend. They've got McKinsey with them. So.
We welcome the Deputy Speaker and the Chief Whip of the Majority Party. We are battling with the apologies here. That's why we welcome you coming in. Can we have a motion for the adoption of the agenda? Kalipi, you move.
No, Speaker, I seek your guidance before we move for the adoption of the agenda. There is an item that I need your guidance. It's regarding the, what do you call it, the delegation of Parliament to overseas. So I think it must be taken by the rules. But I know today is not on the agenda.
So maybe I will be balanced because I propose that for the next joint rule, if that matter can be tabled, so we can have a discussion around it.
Because the current delegation that is used format, we are using the old one when EFF was not in Parliament. On the very same matter, Madam Speaker, while the joint rules or the rules committee will take place, in the meantime, I will pursue that the presiding officers must look at the matter.
Well, there's also an item on the parliamentary group on international relations. We might perhaps find space for such a discussion under that item. This is point number 7. In the agenda. I'm just not aware what are the issues that are going to be tabled under that item, but I'm saying such a discussion would not be lost under that item. Honorable Mendes.
Thank
Thank you, Speaker. I also would like your guidance or clarification if the issue of the attendance of ministers in the House is here before we adopt the agenda. I think that would belong in the Rules Committee of a specific House, like the National Assembly. You know, remember this is the Joint Rules Committee. So that item can serve under the Rules Committee of the National Assembly. I also, where's Honorable Kornoff? The Office of the Leader of Government Business, I think, are bringing an item that would include the matter you are raising, the matter of concern to you, which we will talk about. Where is that? There is a proposal coming from the Leader of Government Business which covers also the area of attendance by ministers as an issue, you know, requiring attention. But I see it's not on the agenda. Mr. Kassos, can you just talk to that?
Yes, ma'am, the LOGB office is making a submission on Chapter 3 of the Joint Rules. Now, the question that must be dealt with by this committee is whether the committee wishes to deal with that in this meeting, or it should be referred to the Joint Subcommittee so that it's dealt with when we deal with Chapter 3, because today we're dealing with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 of the Joint Rules.
Can I suggest that indeed we will allow Honorable Kornoff just briefly to speak to the substance of what the submission is about so that we can agree to refer it. So it comes indeed when we are going to be dealing with Chapter 3, which is not today. We are not going to be dealing with Chapter 3 today. But that by the time it gets here, at least the subcommittee will have had a look, will have processed the issues, will come to us with the necessary recommendations that would have been considered. Would that cover you, Honorable Mente? Okay. So, may I still have a motion for the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Tidiza moves. Honorable Kalipi seconds. Therefore the agenda has been adopted. Thank you. Can we look at the minutes? I take them as read. I take the minutes as read. Are there any corrections in the minutes as a whole? No corrections, no amendments. And by the way, we now have a quorum. Is there a motion for the adoption of the minutes? Is the correct record? Honorable Bengu moves. Is there a seconder? Do I have a seconder? Where's Honorable Singh? He's always very useful. Honorable Bidiza second. Are the matters arising? Mr. Tato?
Most of the issues are covered in today's agenda. The public participation model, the ruling and as well as the report of the subcommittee. So they will be taken care of when the committee deals with the agenda, with the rest of the agenda.
Okay, can we now go to item number 5, consideration of the draft public participation model? Yes, Madam Nkalipi?
Still on the minute, on page 7, the last one. I just want to check if that appropriate structure, it takes the matter up regarding the rules, the rule 92.
I'm sorry, I'm being disturbed here. So I didn't hear what you said, Honorable Nkalipi.
Oh, Madam Speaker, I was referring to page 7 of the minute. Yes. It says that Mrs. Didiza said that NA Rule 92 did not provide a procedure on how to raise a point of order. She proposed that the matter be addressed by the appropriate structure. So I'm checking if that appropriate structure did take this matter up or not.
Ma'am, this relates to, I think it's Rule 92 of the NA. Yes, point of order. But what has happened is that in these joint rules, the issue around point of order has been clarified, and the rule has been expanded to be as comprehensive, at least for now, as the NA rule. So the appropriate structure to deal with issues of the rules for the NA would be the NA Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee, of course, the matter will be raised there.
So I'll back with the minutes now. Honorable Steenhuisen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's item 8 on page 5 of the minutes. I just want to indicate that this matter is still not resolved. I still don't have the principle of your ruling around the ruling that was made around Mrs. Honorable Denise Robinson's matter. And the time frames were set there that it was supposed to be done and concluded by December 2016. And we still don't have the ruling in that regard.
From the joint subcommittee on review of joint rules.
So I just want to indicate I was part of the process, and I demand
it didn't come up.
It has not been finalized. The matter. Parties were asked to make submissions, and Honourable Boy and I had exchanged memorandums, but we certainly don't have the ruling, the principle of the ruling, and the EFF.
Honourable Mtakane.
Chair, Honourable Speaker and Honourable Chair, now, I want to make a proposal that maybe we should be allowed again to look at it. We gave the party sufficient time to go and look at the matter. We met again, but we have not finalized it ourselves. I just think that maybe we should be given another time to finalize it.
Okay. Well, I'm very patient. Yes, Honourable.
I'm seeking clarity because I was under the impression that there's a report of the subcommittee which deals with two issues. One would be the reviewed rules. And item 2 under that is the ruling made in the joint sitting of 22, November 2015. And the subcommittee had an extensive discussion on the matter. And we were under the impression that this was conclusive. But if the chair of the subcommittee says it was not conclusive, then I will take that. But it's been circulated.
Can we just park it until we're done with item 5? I know that it's been raised the minutes. But I'm just asking that, can we just let it pass a little? Can we move to item 5 and talk about the public participation model?
Thank you, Speaker, Chairperson, and honorable members. I would like to refer the meeting to item 6 on the minutes contained on pages 3 and 4. At the meeting of 2016, before the Joint Rules Committee, we made a presentation on the public participation model, and the agreement in that meeting was that the model must be referred to the parties, which we did, Honorable Speaker and Chairperson, and we have called for comments from the parties. Today we have not received any comments, Madam Speaker and Madam Chair. So therefore, we assume that the parties do not have anything further to add to the model. We therefore proposing that the Joint Rules Committee must now adopt the model as presented.
Honorable Tidiza, there is a proposal from the table staff of the two houses, the secretary, that we adopt this model that has been with us, and the parties have been expected to make input. Can we now speak to that, Honorable Tidiza?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, as it is indicated in the meeting, we've had enough time to consult and reflect on the public participation model. We would all appreciate that while we had accepted the principle of participatory democracy and how our citizens can engage with Parliament, there had never been a clear framework that guides all of us, including committees on how to work. And I think this framework is a start, giving us an opportunity to have such a framework. We appreciate that there may be a need to strengthen it over time, but I would say as a start, it would be good that we adopt it. And I therefore, on our side, support that we adopt this model. Thank you very much.
Honorable Stienese.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and I've heard what the Honourable Didiza had to say. However, I do have several concerns. The first concern relates to a report which your office has commissioned called the High Level Panel, which looks at how Parliament has conducted itself and the effect of legislation has been on communities. And I think it would be premature to adopt this today without us looking to how we could incorporate in this model some of the findings that are made by the high-level panel. I think this, what happens often is we receive these reports, and you'll remember we've had the Corder report, we had the Asmal report, we had a variety of reports, and what happens is they get tabled in Parliament and we don't really do much with them. And so I think that I don't think there's a rush for us to pass it. I'm not aware of a deadline, maybe you could indicate that, but I think it would certainly be more meaningful if we were able to incorporate some of the findings of the high-level panel where it requires to be adjusted here. I know there's also been some extensive work done on the role of Chapter 9 institutions in their supplementary oversight and accountability role in supplementing the work of Parliament. I also think that we should provide some space for that to be incorporated. But thirdly, Madam Speaker, and you would know from our interactions with the Joint Standing Committee on the Financial Management of Parliament and the budget, that there are significant budget constraints facing us going into the next financial year. And I have no doubt that when the new budget is passed, there is not going to be much good news for the institution in terms of what can be rolled out. And so I think perhaps we need to take our new financial reality that we operate in now into consideration in looking at some of the events that we want to do, taking Parliament to the people, taking committees to the people. There are going to be significant financial implications around those, moving Parliament away from the precincts into external venues. And I think that we need to be very careful that we don't adopt a model that we're not going to be able to have a form-following function in terms of the budget that we have, and that, you know, every little bit of budget that we do have that's extra should be ploughed into the core business function of Parliament, filling posts in that area. So these are the concerns that I have in relation to us adopting this model today. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Honourable Nyami Boy, Honourable Deputy Speaker, Honourable Chief Whip.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have thought that in terms of the minutes and what was the issue last time. That's why it is said that I support Honourable TTs because that particular mandate that you were given has been fulfilled. And I'm just taking that the Honourable Member, Chief Whip of the Opposition Party, is raising a lot of new issues that were not subjected to that particular meeting, and show that maybe this meeting adopt the model and relook at all the other suggestions that they're beginning to make and see how to fit them in the process of an adopted report. This model has been on the front of us or in circulation in Parliament for a very long time for us to keep on postponing it. But issues are not going to end where we are today. There will always be new issues that will always arise. That you can see as work in progress. But I would support Honourable TTs in that. Let's adopt the model for this particular prospect.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I'd like to firstly support the idea that we agree to support the adoption of this model. But I want to say that the point that Honourable Steyn has raised is a significant one and crucial. The possible outcomes of the high-level panel that we did expect that it might have impact on a range of issues. My suggestion is that those, like any other that might arise as we implement, like any plan, once it hits the ground, new dynamics emerge that require adjustment. That we give a mandate that once we have adopted this, the findings that come out of the high-level panel must be, where appropriate, incorporated into the model. So it will enable us to work with a formally agreed system instead of continuing to go without a formally agreed system. It's been too long, and this is the problem that we are facing with. So my recommendation that we accept his recommendation for taking on board the findings of the high-level panel, but those be incorporated in an already existing model. We do expect those changes to occur as we go along, including the financial consideration. They are crucial, but let it be what happens as we implement, rather than suspend adoption and wait for the findings that change that may not be immediately available. Thank you.
Honorable Chukwu.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I'm quite covered by the Deputy Speaker that indeed this is a living document. All living documents can be improved when other conditions arise that might need such documents to be improved. But you need to have something to improve so that when the matters that are raised by Honourable Steyn Nathan are concluded, we are then able to see how best does the document speak to those matters that will arise from time to time. At least you have something to work from. We therefore agree that this document, it has been with us for quite some time, and we have been asked by your office, Honourable Speaker, as parties that we must make our own submissions. Coming to this meeting, we have heard that no submissions have been made, regarding this particular document. Therefore, I will then say that let's adopt the document and again characterize it as a living document that we will be able to, you know, to make additions from time to time after we adopt it today. And again, thank you, and thanks to colleagues that have worked on this particular document. Thanks.
I want to point out that honorable members, in fact, we are receiving the report from the high-level panel next week. I don't think we will have done anything to this document except expressing what we are expressing now, that it must be formally adopted. And then I think we should immediately seek to do what Honorable Sienhazen has proposed, because indeed it would be critical for us to do that, to take into account insights and issues and matters that have been that have come out of this thorough process of the past 2 years, on which the high-level panel is going to give us feedback. So I don't see that there's a contradiction between the view that says let's formally adopt the public participation model, but let us effect the necessary changes and amendments where in fact it is relevant when we receive the report of the high-level panel. Can we agree on that basis that we adopt the model? Honorable Sienhazen?
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. I mean, I have a problem with that, because we saw what happened when we adopted the rules, we rushed the rules through. I think that it would be remarkably disrespectful to the work of the high-level panel to put it into this process as an add-on. But nonetheless, that's my view and my opinion. Madam Speaker, may I just ask, sir, it's been so long since we last saw this, what the public participation process on this document has been. Did we consult with the public on how they would like Parliament to consult with them and to interact with them? And what public advertisement processes were used and public engagement processes were used for the compilation of this particular document?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We have presented before this committee the processes that we went through. We have presented before this committee the consultation process with the parties. So we have done extensive consultation on the document itself, on the model itself.
My question was around the specific public participation processes on this document. Was it put on Parliament's website? Did we call for the public to comment on it so they could give an indication of how they would like us to engage with them? Or was it just political parties that were provided with it?
Indeed, Speaker and Chairperson, Honourable Sienhazen, the public was also consulted on the model itself. Okay, thank you, Speaker. I'll request my colleagues also to assist there to respond to the issues. I'll request Mr. Chabalala to respond.
Thank you, Advocate. Good morning, Speaker. Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. We can confirm, as part of the reports that have been presented to this forum and also as part of the consultation, that there was extensive public participation that took place. We held public hearings in all the provinces, working with the provincial legislature. Because as you recall, that this is a process that also emanates from the sector work, where the Speaker's Forum has commissioned this work to be done, and as part of the instruction, public participation was central. So we held public hearings in all the 9 provinces. The website of Parliament was also used to source input from members of the public. There was also interaction with civil society, where time was given, and there was good response as far as input into the public participation model. So we can definitely confirm, and the documents can be sent, Honorable Speaker and Chair, to members of this forum to show the extent to which we went to solicit public input. In fact, we also had analysis of all the input, looking at different age groups, looking at different dynamics of the Republic, rural, urban, etc., with regards to the public input that was given to us.
Honorable Deputy Speaker.
The last paragraph is reference to the summary of what Honorable Chalalan just said. But Madam Speaker, I also wanted to suggest that any amendment to the model as we accept today, obviously those we would expect them to be brought before this meeting, at this next meeting, for formal adoption, that these are the changes that we have introduced and we therefore seek their adoption. So I think that that will help us in doing what we essentially want to do, to have a formally adopted model that has received input including from the high-level panel staff, which we expect will be done formally by the staff. Our next meeting, I don't know when it is, but... sorry? Yes. In other words, you see, this is the, if we were to postpone adopting, we wouldn't have a formal system in place to work on. When we could have this one, have it adjusted as recommended, and then perhaps in the individual house meetings, we could look at those and continue to work using the basic framework.
Honorable Schienese.
Madam Speaker, I accept that we need to obviously have something in the interim, and I'm sympathetic to that, but I mean, I have very serious concerns that I've laid out. Could we perhaps not, as a compromise then, pass a resolution here that this body will convene within 3 months of the high-level panel's tabling of their report to consider how the model could be adjusted to incorporate the findings of the high-level panel? Because I don't want us to say we're going to, you know, have input into this, and we sit here a year later, and we're not having you know, amended the model accordingly, then it just makes the work of the high-level panel with respect, you know, irrelevant, because unless we internalize what they tell us, it's going to have been a complete waste of their time, our resources, etc. So I'm comfortable to adopt it, but provided that we put a time frame that we will then review or assist in how we can get this, incorporate the high-level panel's findings, as well as the findings that I'm sure will emanate from the Deputy Speaker's office on integration of Chapter 9s and their role in supporting us in oversight, accountability and public participation, etc.
Honorable Ngoyi.
I don't think the Speaker will have an issue when we say we adopt the model, and based on the model, we then look for a new time frame for give you, your office, a chance to go through and look at the report of the high level and see what are the issues that should be looked into to incorporate into this particular model and refer it to different parties or either as a subcommittee to assist into how we can reincorporate it so that it becomes a part of the process. And then in 3 months' time, we can convene and look at the process and consolidate it. It's also true that the funding or how we budget for it is something that should be brought into the process itself, and maybe then as that particular committee to look at all your suggestions that you think are needed to assist the participation model document with the new suggestions from the high level and the funding, all those issues to be incorporated so that in 3 months' time you come and have a live document. But why did you speak, Deputy Speaker, I say, you can only talk to a document when it has been adopted. You can't say you've got a model of participation when it has never been adopted.
We now are at the point where we are agreeing in principle to adopt the model with the rider so that we remind ourselves that in 3 months' time, in no more than 3 months' time after the receipt of the report of the high-level panel, we areas that would have been considered. In other words, after receiving the high-level panel report, we will already start working on looking at the areas that are relevant for incorporation into this model. So that work would have been done, and in 3 months' time after that, we convene in order to see how we have done that. Agreed? Okay. Now, we come now to item 6, which is the report of the Joint Subcommittee on Review of Joint Rules. Babu Tagan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm presenting this report on behalf of our Joint Subcommittee of the Joint Rules, with a view that the leadership in this meeting will look at our proposal or the proposed amendment to Chapter 1 and 2A of the Joint Rules. And then hopefully we'll have then a discussion in other areas, but we tried our level best to apply our mind on the issues and the rules that we are proposing for adoption by the meeting today. And we have subdivided our presentation into two. There are areas from Chapter 1 and then Chapter 2. And on the first page, first, just to thank also the members, Honorable Speaker, of the Joint Sub-Rules Committee. We have participated fully in developing these proposals. We have agreed as a subcommittee, even in our meeting yesterday, again we look at it, and we agreed that we are ready to present it, to present the documentation of the report for your consideration. On Chapter 1, first, Honorable Speaker, part 1 of it is not a bigger issue. I don't think we have a problem unless the language issue, those are language issues, would assist us to develop it further. But there are definitions. But I want to draw the attention of the members on two issues that we included there. That is the point of order. What is the point of order? In terms of page 3 of the document, I'm not sure that all of us, we do have the copy. Page 3 of the document on top there, we have defined what is the point of order. It's an issue that has been abused on many occasions in many meetings and many sittings. We have defined it a little bit better to make it easy for members of parliament to understand what is the point of order. Mm-hmm. Also, the issue that is becoming also a point of just discussion is the question of privilege. What is the point of privilege? We have also defined in our own understanding what is the point of privilege. And then, Honorable Speaker, some of the areas really, they are just general definitions. We don't think there were problems. The subcommittee was happy that we should present it for this consideration. And then on part 2, Honorable Speaker, on page 4 of the document that I have, is talk about the sources of authority of Parliament. We have also made an introduction there. We have highlighted all of them, what we think are sources of Parliament, where we derive our mandate as Parliament, also members of Parliament generally where they derive their mandate. We have then made those issues there, just to indicate, Honorable Speaker, that the underlying part of any sentence is the one that you are proposing as an amendment. The bolded one or the bracketed one is one that we are proposing for that we should delete them. And then as you see all of them that are underlined, they simply mean that a new introduction that we are proposing or new amendment that we are proposing. And then on page 2 of the document, we have also dealt with the question of Honorable Speaker, I think I shouldn't take rule by rule because already they are here. And then Honorable Member will look at it, otherwise it will take a long time. I am just preferring to take it part by part or section by section. That can also assist us to deal with some of the issues. Of course, if members want to make some input, also they will indicate. We have also improved the language, of course. We are being assisted by state law advisors, and then also assisted by our own legal team in Parliament. but also many members of the community, particularly research centers and communities also assisted us to give some input on what we are trying to do. Our view is that it was a public participation exercise, but of course it didn't go to provinces to seek their view because these are rules of parliament. And the part two that we are raising, the unforeseen circumstances or eventualities, we have proposed what we are proposing as a rule sub one and sub two, and then we move, Honorable Speaker, to propose 2A, that is directives and guidelines of the Joint Rules Committee. And in the area that we are putting there, that there will always be guidelines that are developed for the proper functioning and implementation of the rules. Our view is that sub 1 and 2 of 2A will assist us to clarify the issues that have been sometimes debated on many occasions. We have also moved on, Honorable Speaker, to 2B, the rulings. Just also to indicate, Honorable Speaker, that what Paso was raising about the issue of ruling, there's a lot of discussion about this several times in our own subcommittee, trying to look at the rulings that were given on the, I think, 1st of September 2016. We have looked at it. Generally, there was a general agreement on the principles, but what was left only was just for us to adopt it formally as a subcommittee, which I think that we can do it as soon as possible, just to adopt it formally. But also allow the parties where to have time to look at it. And I'm told that the parties have looked at what we are proposing. No party really came back to say we didn't apply our mind. Generally, they say that the principles, as they said, they cover many of some of these issues. It's the only issue that we requested. Other parties requested that now. Let us give them some few weeks to go and convert with their caucuses, hopefully, if the House allows. If the rules, some joint rules agree, we can then adopt this one in terms of the ruling that was given on the 1st of September 2016. But to move on, Honorable Speaker, because we're doing the ruling, we have proposed these two, three amendments, sub 1, 2, and 3. That deals with the ruling and 4A and 4B. That deals with the ruling. What is the ruling of the Speaker? What can you do when you are aggrieved and what are the areas that you can do, what are the procedures and processes. And on that one also, general, there's an argument. That is a very important area for us to clarify what is the rule of the Speaker, to avoid members engaging with the presiding officers, even if they have made a ruling on a matter that's before the House or before the Chamber. On 2C, Honorable Speaker, there are just conventions and practices. It has been a lot of discussion, really. That parliamentary democracy started a long time ago, then there are practices, there are conventions that members of parliament should respect. We are making those two, three areas, there, sub 1, 2, and 3, for the consideration of the House or the meeting. And then we move on the area then that is very difficult sometimes to deal with, is the contempt of members. On that area, we have tried to expand because we have also explained in terms of definition what is contempt. And then to make it easy for presiding officers in terms of the guidelines and directives. And then I'm on page 6, Honorable Speaker. On suspension and supplementing of the rules, we have made a point also, Honorable Speaker, that the rules of the rules of parliament meaning the two houses, or the joint rules of parliament, shouldn't just suspend them willy-nilly. They should really only be suspended or supplementing the rules if there's a need to do so. Who are to plan properly should not necessarily be a good reason to suspend the rules, because honorable members only respect the rules when they're not suspended willy-nilly. And then that's the point that you are putting there with 3 on page 6. And then the issue there, sub 1 and sub 3, and then we are including their proposal. Honorable member will look at that. And then on page 7 on the document, the application of the joint rule to non-members. On that area also, we are just expanding in terms of the constitution, who are non-members, and then what does it mean? Just to ensure that all of us are clear about who are non-members and how do you apply the rules of the joint sitting on the non-members. Because, Honorable Speaker, on 6, we have already agreed on public participation, and then we think the rule as it stands, Honorable Speaker, then will be appropriate. already agreed or subject to other issues that have been raised by the honourable member. That is really what we call chapter one that we are proposing. I'm not sure what the honourable speaker can just move on with, or want to look at the document, or want me to stop on chapter one to finalize the honourable chair.
I think we must hear from the members whether they want to interact with the suggestions and recommendations as you put them on chapter one. The floor is open on chapter one, honourable members. You suggest we proceed. Honourable Steenhuisen, what were you on? You can come back. Okay. The suggestion is that we proceed to chapter two. Please proceed, Mr. Dimbagan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And then, subsection 7, the calling of joint sitting. We have already explained what is the calling of a joint sitting, the rules as they stand, the president, the parliament, and what are the purposes, what are the section or clauses on the constitution that will allow us to do so. We have also, honorable speaker, just draw attention of our honorable members on sub 3, 7 sub 3, on page 7. No other business may be considered during a joint sitting other than the specified business for which that joint sitting is called. And is the one that we are putting in there to ensure that the joint sittings are just joint sittings to deal the subject matter. There shouldn't be a lot of point of order, point of privilege, or what do you call it, privilege, point of privilege, that completely take away the main purpose of the joint sitting. It's the point that we are making there, Honorable Speaker. And we think, as Honorable Chair, that will look at that. Of course, we have agreed that we should also be clear about what is the opening of Parliament, and then what is then the state of the national trust. We separated the two, just to make it easy for all of us, that Parliament generally start anywhere when they speak on the national chair, they agree, and then Parliament can start in January 1st or January 2nd, whatever. But state of the national trust is a separate item at all. And we try to separate the two, and we are making those proposals, sub 7, sub A, 2, 1, 2, and 3, and 7B, when we talk about present state of the national address. What is the state of national address? We have already explained at the beginning what is that. And then we are putting two proposals, 1, 2, and 3, that members should really be considered. Of course, we have also quoted the constitution, the rules, just to make it easy for members of parliament to know what is there the state of the national trust. The venue, Honorable Speaker, is an easy one. Time and date and time is an easy one. And then the issue is 10 on page 9, presiding officers. We are just proposing sub 2 of 10, because it's an issue that was missing there. That if the chair and the national speaker are not available, they can mandate the deputy chair and the deputy speaker to preside over the joint sitting. And of course, keep that by that they have given the requested members for the chair the chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, if they agree. And then we have 11, it's just a simple issue. It's about just the leave of presiding officers. It happens every day. In Parliament, it hasn't been a problem. And we are raising an issue there, 11.8, general authority and responsibility of the presiding officer. Just A, B, and C, that's just a simple issue. But we all know that presiding officers, they sit there. They are managing the house, that is not a church, it's a political debate. Therefore, the political debate will be full. Sometimes tensions will be high. Sometimes there will be a lot of agreement, it will be a very hot debate. But we thought those A, B, and C are very important just to guide the presiding officer. What is expected from them when they sit there and preside over the whole debate, whatever debate, or sometimes a very healthy debate, sometimes a very friendly debate in the chamber. And then those are issues that we are raising, A, B, and C. We are going to have also, Honorable Speaker, what we call consequential numbering, because we have to amend, we have to renumber the document. And then on discipline, Honorable Speaker, and then there are issues there that we are raising. And then, of course, discipline in terms of the National Assembly is a separate issue. Also, in terms of the NCOP is a separate issue. Our view was that the houses themselves, they are able to deal with the question of discipline. Of course, also there's Powers and Privileges Act, and also there's ethics committees, when there are issues, really, that concern members in terms of discipline. And then 1, 2, and 3 on page 10, Honorable Speaker, on top, is an issue that we are putting in there, really. First, we are making a point also that there are no issues, really. The joint sitting generally is a good discussion, engagement, political, and on the policy issues and other, but there's no decision that is made except in terms of Section 203 of the Constitution, and then that where the joint sitting can take a decision. And then otherwise, just real discussion and debate, there will be no issue about decision-making in that area. Public access, Honorable Speaker, we tried to elaborate it a little bit further, given the experience that we had also of some in the public gallery. And we thought that those subsections, 13.1 to 10, they assist us, Honorable Speaker, to deal with the procedure, processes, and how to deal with the members of the public, given the fact that Parliament is a tribune of our people, therefore they are free to come. But how do you ensure that as they come in, what are the issues there? And then that's what we are making as a proposal. But on page 11, in chapter 2A, is an issue that we have created to have a discussion on, is an order in joint sitting and rules of debate. And then in part one and also in part two, we have tried our level best to deal with the issue of freedom of speech in a joint sitting. Some of the issues that we are raising here are already covered in terms of the principle on the issues that was referred to us. And then in terms of what we call a freedom of speech of members of parliament, we are making a proposal there. Is there a new rule that we are proposing? And of course, we raise the issue about conduct of members, and it will be on page. The bolded one, again, our proposal that is the deleted part. The underlined one is what we are proposing as a rules amendment. On the issue of conduct, of course, we tried our level best. We think we shouldn't be too descriptive, but at the same time, we should not be too vague to allow members to be creative in making sometimes very difficult. Of course, members are honorable members. They wouldn't do anything that is unbecoming. And the point that we're raising there, on code of conduct, members must, and then that A to J, we are making those proposals, the new amendment that we think the House, the meeting will consider. And then the issue that is always there, Honorable Speaker, that is stating, see, we have already put it again, something members should not converse aloud. It's just a rule that is there, really. It doesn't cause any harm to anyone. And then 13D, Honorable Speaker, we are making that proposal, just a language issue. But there are sub 1, sub A and B, that also we have, but we draw attention to the members on B. Because everything really, at the political science of faith, is a question of discretion of the presiding officer. And then that B to us is very important, because the presiding officer will have discretion. They shouldn't be forced to take decision even when they see that, you know, they don't want to give you a platform, because they do have a discretion to do so in terms of question, in terms of speaking, also in terms of raising any matter in the chamber. We thought we raised that point. 13E, Honorable Speaker, was just raising the precedent issue. That once the presiding officer stand up there and say, or in a joint sitting, because it's a rule for joint sitting, we'll stop, Honorable Member, you can't engage with the speaker or the presiding officer. That's the point that we are making. Another one that has been there all along, we have deleted part of it and inserted a new proposal, irrelevance and repetition. It is there. It's a very good embellishment, generally, to remain there. But of course, members sometimes they don't honor it because it's a difficult thing to do. Repetition is always there for political reasons. Then the issue that is much more, we want to draw members of parliament, also members of the committee, their attention to look at it, is 14FA. prosecutor's orderly conduct. We are elaborating there a little bit better. We are proposing those underlying areas of our rules A to F, A to F, Honorable Chair. And another area really is the question of language, to withdraw, to leave, generally to improve the language, to ensure that the rules of the national, of the rules of parliament, or joint rules of parliament, at least they are able then to capture what is happening in other parliaments in terms of the improvement of language. You find in many areas now we put must instead of shall, because shall was used and in Victorian time. I think we have developed now to use must, just to indicate again the importance of the group. The removal of a member is of course, there will be renumbering, Honorable Speaker, because there we are proposing deletion of 2 and 3, and then we are going to be consequential renumbering on that one. And then it's a long process that we are indicating there. What are the procedures? What is the process? Because members of parliament have a freedom of speech in parliament, they are protected by the Powers and Privileges Act, by the Constitution. We try to be very detailed, Honorable Speaker, Honorable Chair, because we think this is an area that is very important for us. Because removal of members in parliament should be an extraordinary circumstance, because they are there representing communities or their constituencies. Then we have put there from 1 to 12, is what we are proposing. And it is there for procedural issues, how we move on that. We have also put some point on to speak on 18H, referral of member conduct. Again, that one really is there. We reconfirm it. There's no issue there that you wanted to move. 13L or I, think it's I, expression of regret. We have seen it happening in other houses, members standing up there, apologizing, showing remorse for whatever area, whatever misconduct shown in the house. And then we are amending it that way, Honorable Speaker, 1, 2, and 3. And then we think that is correct. And then 13J, well, is an issue really that has always been discussed, but I think there's an argument there, reflection upon judges or 13 other than office bearers. It's an issue that is there. We have improved the language. We also try our level best to amend it accordingly. The underlying section indicating again members draw the attention to section 194 of the Constitution is very explicit. What is it really that we are talking about? The issue that is raised there, that sometimes they have that those really who depend on us for whatever offices, but we are not members of parliament, how do we interact with them? And how do we behave in a manner that will give respect and honor to people that we appoint, not really attacking them when they cannot answer for themselves? Is an issue there that we are putting in. 13K is just an issue of grave disorder. And then we think that one is correct, we must leave it there. And L is an issue again that we are raising there. It has been always been there that the members should address the chair. The point that we are improving there is just language issue. Because there will be members really who can not stand up and address the chair. And then we are moving there. There are 1 and 2 and 3. In that area really is an area that I think honorable members generally would respect, to ensure that there are no bubbles in the parliament. These are areas that we are putting in, honorable members, Mr. Madam, whatever, honorable members are prepared. We hope that members really at least they will stick to these areas because they are very important to keep dignity in the chamber. That's what we are proposing. And then B and C also, that's what we are proposing. And then taking M, honorable speaker, it's just amendments. It's not a very controversial one or very difficult one. I think it's a very easy one. So that all members should speak only when they are recognized by the presiding officer. We know sometimes members will stand up there, take the microphone and speak even before they are recognized. We thought that they should respect this one because it's very helpful for us to have a proper engagement at the broadcast. 13M, honorable speaker, is an issue really of microphone, and then in no issue really that is very difficult in that area, because it's an area that is very important, and then allowing the presiding officers to decide whether they switch off or not. Of course, they make announcements. Honorable Steinhausen, now I'm switching off, I'm disabling the microphone and switch it off, and Steinhausen should accept it. And then we move on an area of 13A, a limit of speeches, on that one, we will retain as it is. Reference to members by name is an issue that we always really request, that the members must refer to one another in a respectful manner. And is an issue that we are putting there. 13P, Honorable Speaker, it's just about parliamentary language and gestures. And then we are putting there, who shall, and then we are improving the language, putting may, of course, saying they shouldn't be unparliamentary, offensive, abusive, insulting, or disrespectful manner, unbecoming language. The one and two, Honorable Speaker, that's what they're proposing. And then the 13PAA is just decisions that are taken by a House. It can't be attacked also by members of the House. That's a simple issue that we are raising there, that we can't take a decision and come back the next day and say this decision was a very foolish or stupid decision. You can't do that because you're a member of the House. You have taken a decision, must respect your own decision. Possible to lawyer and also be loyal to discussion. We have reinstated the issue of statutory care. We know that a lot of discussion in terms of those who are legal-minded, what is the issue of statutory care, whether it applies or doesn't apply, but we have retained it here because we think it's important still to put it down, 13L. It's just explanation, Honorable Speaker. There was not a very serious issue there. It's just an issue that happened in all parliaments for people to explain really themselves if they need to do so. We just improved the language there and also included an A and B. And point of orders on page 20, Honorable Speaker. Point of order is very detailed there. Again, just to ensure that members know exactly what is the point of order. We try our level best to explain what is the point of order. Also in definition, we've explained what is the point of order. We thought that the area that we are amending here will assist us in the joint sitting for members to know what is the point of order. And the Honorable Speaker, moving then the question of privilege. We have explained again what is the question of privilege. That members, they don't understand that there is a question of privilege because they don't agree with a member. Also, sometimes they're not happy with the ruling of the presiding officer, then they use the question of privilege to almost distract really. We have explained again what is that, how it works. And our speaker then is at 1, 2, and 3. Acting for absent member is a normal situation, Honorable Speaker, Honorable Chair. And then right of members to speak again is a normal issue in all parliaments. And then, well, of course, 13V, Honorable Speaker, just to reply, and also ensure that when you reply, because if you're a member in charge, you reply there, we are closing the debate. This is what Honorable Speaker want to make as proposal, Honorable Chair, as proposal for members of the Joint Rules Committee to approve or to look at it and also to improve if there are areas that are lacking. Again, Honorable Speaker, all members of the subcommittee work together in this area. They didn't agree in every point, but at the end, all of us agree that that's what we should present for your consideration and our wishes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I was also advised that the Honorable Kuranov may want to come in at this point on the input they are making. I suggest that we do that and then we go into discussion.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. We submitted this document from the Leader of Government Business yesterday as a proposal to the subcommittee for consideration. Just briefly, it proposes amendments to Rule 150 of the Joint Rules and the relevant definitions, which speaks to the role of the Leader of Government Business. It is proposed in the context of the Constitution, in the context of legal provisions, and of against the background of certain practicalities that has developed in Parliament over the last couple of sessions and years. document talks to currently Rule 149 and 150. It's establishment of the Office of the Leader of Government Business, the role of the Leader of Government Business. And in the document and in the joint rules, you have other rules like Rule 191, Rule 159, 216 that also refer to the Leader of a Government Business. Basically, the document talks to the role of the Leader of Government Business. Now, Section 91(4) of the Constitution talks to the President must appoint a member of the Cabinet to be Leader of Government Business in the National Assembly. That's what the Constitution says. But the Constitution also defines Parliament as consisting of two houses, namely the ANA and the NCOP. And this must be kept in mind when we construct the role of the Leader of Government Business. Furthermore, the Constitution does not define the role of the Leader of Government Business. The LOGB is also role is also not defined in legislation. And it is evolved through custom and practice, but its precise parameters are dealt with in Rule 150. The role of the Leader of Government Business, the document argues, must be seen in a context of the overlap between members of the executive and members of the legislature. The Constitution also, Section 92(2), refers to the role of the Cabinet, namely that they are accountable collectively and individually to Parliament for the exercise of their functions and duties, but also that they must provide Parliament with full and regular reports on a regular basis of matters concerning under their control. The document states that the Constitution, no rule of Parliament or any other entity can supersede the provisions of the Constitution. So we propose that Rule 150 should be amended to reflect the constitutional position regarding the Leader of Government Business, as well as reiterating the position that the executive remains committed to ensuring it comes regularly to the legislature and to Parliament. On a practical level, as you would know, Chairperson, in the there is an Office of the Leader of Government Business in Parliament. And this office accounts to the Secretary of Parliament. This office makes arrangements regarding the attendance of ministers in the House. And this office is in Parliament is separate from the Office of the Leader of Government Business or the Office of the Deputy President. In the Office of the Leader of Government in Parliament, they are accountable to the Secretary of Parliament. They are funded by Parliament. And they take the responsibility for scheduling the attendance of Cabinet members in Parliament, amongst other executive liaison functions related to Parliament. And as you all know, there are two very capable officials operating in that office that is doing a sterling job. This document, I'm not going into detail on page 5, also refers to the other roles of this office that you can look at that document. We also included international comparative research on at least 4 countries where we compare and describe what the role of the Leader of Government Business is. In conclusion, on page 9, you will find proposed amendments. First, we want to suggest that there are two different changes in definitions or amendments. So you will find the definition of the Leader of Government Business. It must be defined in front of the joint rules. And secondly, we propose that the Office of Leader of Government Business in Parliament, that office must be called a Cabinet Liaison Office. And then, if that is agreed to, that needs to be defined in the joint rules. Then, Rule 150 on page 9 and page 10, you will see there's a small amendment, namely that instead of ranging and reporting, it says it must report, the Leader of Government must report to Cabinet regarding the attendance of Cabinet members as appropriate. So the rest of the rule keeps the same. for practical purposes and to facilitate liaison between the executive and the legislature across the whole of parliament, the leader of government business is also must also perform the above role in the council, in the National Council of Provinces. What I omitted to mention to you earlier is that leader of government business, who's appointed by the president, need not be the deputy president. The president can appoint anybody to be a leader of the government business. As a matter of fact, if my memory serves me correctly, the first leader of government business in the democratic dispensation was Mr. Trevor Manuel, who was not a deputy president. And then the second part is a definition or establishment of the cabinet liaison office, and then Rule 150B defining exactly the role of the cabinet liaison office. The full extent of that office, the role of that office, we propose can be listed in the guidelines to the joint rules. And what we basically in conclusion states about the proposed amendment is, one, the amendments clarify the role of the LOGB and the Cabinet Liaison Office in Parliament. This has been a debate going on way before my time, way before the previous councillor to the Deputy President. It's been going on for years. And I think we are proposing something and make a proposal that can clarify. Secondly, the amendments better reflect the constitutional provisions relating to the leader of government business and the accountability of cabinet. It clarifies it. Thirdly, it aligns the rules with the current parliamentary practice. And lastly, aligns the structure and delineation of roles in line with international best practice. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Honourable members, it's according to my time, 1:05. We have a sitting at 2:00. I'd like to suggest that the input which has just been tabled by Honorable Gorenhoff must be referred to the subcommittee, but that we must also try and read up on it so that when we next meet, we can deal with the contents seriously. I want to open the floor, but I warn you that we might not be able to finish the 2 chapters today. Therefore, I will be in your hands to direct, but I would suggest that we reconvene as quickly as possible to finish up what we cannot finish today. The Honorable Steenhuisen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Not November 2018. Chairperson, thank you very much. Just apropos your suggestion in regard to this document, I think it should be circulated. I think there's some constitutional overreach in the document which needs to be dealt with. I don't think that the Constitution prescribes a role for the Deputy President whatsoever in your council, or not the leader of government business in your council. The Constitution is specific about the National Assembly. It doesn't say Parliament. It's the leader of government business in the National Assembly. So we just need to have a look at that. But obviously it will have to come into the process when we get to those chapters, I imagine, in the joint rules. So I'd like to confine my comment to what's before us today. Great. It's the draft 3 then. Just some concerns that I have in relation to these. I think what they've done largely is to bring them in line with the NA rules. So we've had many of these arguments and debates before. Just in terms of B, particularly B there, I really think there's a problem that's occurring in the House in terms of how we hold presiding officers accountable as well. I mean, if we're accountable in terms of the rules to presiding officers, then I think presiding officers also need to be accountable in terms of the rules. And where you have rulings that are egregiously wrong, there's no way of members to be able to obtain justice for those rulings other than how to approach the courts. So if you bring it to the Rules Committee, and you'll see an example of it later, there's no real justice for the fact that that member was thrown out, that the whole party left the chamber as a result of the ruling that had been made.
is just a dealing with an underlying principle, which doesn't really say, well, you know, it was incorrect to throw the honourable member out of the House, and I have a problem with that. So I think that we need to be able to, in the current environment, be able to hold presiding officers accountable for decisions where members are wronged and their rights are infringed upon, the rights that are entrenched in both the Constitution and the rules, and then that's simply just the underlying principle. If the member is held guilty of contempt or referred to disciplinary, it's not the principle of the member's behaviour that's become, it's the actual behaviour of the member. And so whilst we must have utmost and ultimate respect for the presiding officers, with respect to present company, presiding officers are never perfect, and they are human, and they make errors, and where those errors are made, there must be a way to hold them accountable. The only mechanisms available to us now is either a motion of no confidence against that particular presiding officer, or to approach the courts, as has been the recourse. And I just think there needs to be a step between that, where MPs and members of the House are able to obtain justice for that. So I don't know if we're going to be able to get through it today. 11A, I'd ask that 11AC is included in bold, so it's easily remembered and easily seen for members, particularly when they're in the chair during joint sittings. Irrelevance or repetition, that it says here 14F, the presiding officer may order a member addressing a joint sitting to stop speaking if that member, despite warnings from the chair, persists in irrelevance or repetition arguments. The NA deals with a point of order being made. I think that it's not the presiding officer's role to intervene in the debate and make a call on that. I think it would require a point of order. So I think the NA rules say something about if the attention of the presiding officer is drawn to that under that rule. Otherwise, you could have a presiding officer that just says, I don't like what this member is saying. I regard it as relevant. I'm stopping the debate. I think it overreaches the facilitation role that so maybe if we could just look at the wording there to bring it in line with what's in the NA rules, which I think is perfectly acceptable. 13GA3 on page 14, the reference to Assembly Rule 54, maybe a reference to the old rules, not the new rules. The Assembly Rule 54 deals with the presiding officer in the new rules, so that will just have to be corrected to bring in line the relevant rule in the NA rulebook. Um, 13MA is the control of microphones, and I just really think that I'm, you know, having learned from experience now from the National Assembly rules, I think that this is completely abused, and I'm not happy that it's now included in this. I think it is used to shut down people's rights to say what they want to say in the House. And that when presiding officers just simply disagree with what's being said, they're switching off microphones, often without proceeding to step two, just simply switching off the microphone. So I would move to strike that particular section of the rules because it has been chronically abused in the National Assembly. And then just in terms of it's on page 21.10. The deference of decisions is a problem. And I really think that we need to start moving to a situation where presiding officers, when they defer a ruling, you just say earliest opportunity. What we have in the situation now is that there's some rulings we've been waiting almost a year for them. The ruling, I give an example of Mr. Dirks' middle finger to the presiding officer, where he said to the members of the opposition, where the deputy speaker said he was going to come back to the House. And we're still waiting for those rulings. And so I think that where justice is delayed, it's justice denied in the House, and people feel frustrated, and they lose faith that they are being protected by the presiding officer when there are rulings that we wait years to get them back on. So I think we should start moving to a system of making sure that at least at the end of every session, the rulings for that session, or maybe have a time frame every 6 months, outstanding rulings are being made, because otherwise, it just simply becomes a convenient way for presiding officers to defer having to make a tough decision or a tough call in the House. And I understand that that's sometimes required to diffuse the situation, so I don't think we must remove the tool from presiding officers, but there has to be a commensurate rationality and reasonableness in terms of the length of time that you then await that ruling.
from the presiding officer. Other than those concerns, I think that we're happy to support. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Any other member? Yes, ma'am. Ms. Mangan?
Thank you very much. Firstly, it's on the Parliament, the SONA, there are 7A, opening of Parliament. I must first say this, it's going to be very difficult for this type of rulings, in fact rules, to be adopted by us because they are reactionary. They react to what happens in the House. And number two, if ever on 7B, 7A and 7B are read together, we are saying we're going, this is now going to be the new rules of the House, then these rules must apply to the debate as well. We can't bring segregation. When the President delivers SONA, he must speak without any interruption. And when we debate the very same SONA, there must be point of order. It's a contradiction of the highest order. Also, the rules themselves, I don't think they comply with the rights and privileges in the Constitution, in particular Section 58, in terms of members in the House. So it will actually bring us back to what Honorable Steynison is talking about. The courts will have to decide for us on the issues that are very much simpler. And then 13R, also on explanations. This rule is already there, but I don't know whether if we strengthen it the way we're strengthening it, is going to get the attention it deserves, because right now it doesn't get the attention it deserves. So I don't know what will be the difference when you strengthen it by taming it the way you do, because all is in the hands of whoever is presiding at the time. Sometimes they do allow explanations, sometimes they do not allow explanations. So it brings us back to the matter of, are these rules applicable to all of us, and we need not to segregate. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'll call the other standing.
It's fine.
I'm erring on the side of caution.
Thank you, Chair of the NSOP. I just want to concur with my colleagues here. But firstly, I wanted to suggest that we don't have time. We have to go to the House by now. I think we must defer this. We can't adopt this rule now. These rules now, because it needs a lot of engagement. Because my opinion and my view is that some things, they don't need rules. Some of the things, it needs political persuasion. We are sitting here, Madam Speaker, and the Chair of the National Council of Provinces. There is a situation in Zimbabwe that needs to also to enlighten us as South Africa. Because each time there's something that has been happening in the House, you just want to make a rule. You remember very well, pay back the money. You wanted the rule to deal with that situation. And now, because of SONA, you are crafting rules that is not going to help us at all. So that's why I'm submitting that. Let us get some time to come and engage on these things, because we are going to take this proposal to court, and they will not stand the test of time, I'm telling you. Coming back to the page, there is a proposal that speaks about, okay, page 5, 2B, again, here. It can't be just be very easy for us to say that a ruling given by a presiding officer is final. I mean, it has been 4 years already here. We know what is happening in our houses. It's not every time those presiding officers are ruling accordingly. So it can't be easy for us to say, no, it's fine. Because we know at some point, how do they conduct themselves, the presiding officers? And this is not the first time we are raising such matters. And it says that 4, 2B4, A member may request that a ruling be referred to the Joint Rules Committee for consideration and report. Where and when? Because this Joint Rule Committee sits every year. So it does not address the problems that you are facing here. I think there's a different perspective that we also can adopt, Madam Speaker. I'm saying one of them is to find a common solution, is to sit down and find a political solution, because most of the things that we encountered here in Parliament is politics. As the Honourable Stenius was saying, that in some of the rules that are proposed here, seeks to oppress members of Parliament. And you begin to ask yourself, Madam Speaker, why are we here? We are politicians. And the very same building needs to be a bag of ideas from politics, from politicians as well. So we can't be just going to the rules as if we are still in the apartheid. This is the apartheid who used to do this. And Mugabe here in Zimbabwe also adopted the apartheid style. Today, he is confined in his home. And you don't want to get there, Mr. South Africa. I'm appealing to you, Madam Speaker. Let us postpone this engagement and find ample time, because I know, Uti, one of the reasons why you are rushing these rules is because of SONA. So we can engage before SONA, if that is your worry, Mr. Mtagan. We can find time and engage before SONA, but you are not going to adopt this one. Thank you, Sister.
Nyabong, I think we should consider the postponement at this point, because clearly we are not going to do justice to this. Perhaps what we should consider is to put a day aside so that all of us at the end of that particular meeting, we are very clear that we have convinced or been convinced. Thirdly, sometimes a rule on its own doesn't simply, it looks oppressive, but we must also look at the intention of the bill. I would then suggest that, Madam Speaker, through you, we agree to the postponement. We enable the Secretariat to, as soon as possible, find a date that we can all come back to. In the meantime, we refer the Dr. Kurenov document to the subcommittee. We do not prioritize the discussion on the inclusion of Dr. Kurenov's input in the next meeting, only after we have finished what comes in from Chapter 1 and 2, as proposed by Ndate Mtagani, and then get to hear what the subcommittee will inform us on. Two, that in fact, one of the things that might help us, because I have raised this concern in the NCOP, that the rulings of the presiding officers must be published periodically, so that those who were not in the House actually get to see how the other people found. And that then you can even, as Speaker or Chairperson of the NCOP, deal with the matters where you see inconsistencies. Because sometimes they are. Because only when do the rulings stand in instances where you do know that people have been consistent, and the rulings have been repeated, then it becomes precedent. And we need to be able to come back to the House and say, as the executive authority, as the presiding officer, Speaker, and this complaint was raised. I know that on two instances in the NCOP, during the sittings, members have said, we want this ruling of that presiding officer to be referred for confirmation or for setting aside. So we need to go back to the House and say, yes, indeed, we think that that particular person presiding was right, and explain to why. Because at all times, we must also not increase the perception that the person who is presiding is deliberately being biased. If that person is being biased, then we have another issue that we must deal with, because at all costs, we must not be biased. So I would want to agree that we postpone at this point. Masbulele and Pindela will tell us, you will call us to the next meeting
May I thank them on your behalf, Speaker? No. Before 16th of December. unless in your mind you have Dingane's Day. Honourable members, thank you very much. We are adjourned until we are reconvened. Thank you.